Hello, you're listening to the Hamerty Brothers e-commerce podcast. If some of our discussions and tips are working for you, why don't you grab a 15-minute call with us at ecommercecall.com. We'll see whether we can help scale your e-commerce business. We will quickly see if we're a fit or whether we can recommend someone else to get you where you need to go. The worst case is you'll have a fun 15-minute chat, and regardless, you'll come away understanding a lot more about your business. Book a call at ecommercecall.com.
Hello and welcome to today's edition of the Hamersley Brothers e-commerce podcast. We're going to dive back in to the add to basket rate, which we were going through on the last episode. We're actually going to break this up into three episodes because there's so much detail here. And today's episode is going to be really going into depth about the bounce rate and starting to understand how we can really start to move this metric up and really start improving some of your sales and your metrics around that that metric. So let's dive straight into it and let's go back into the interview between myself and Ian. So we were saying really basic benchmark 10%. If your add to basket stat is low, it's because the bounce rate is high. Because on an e-commerce site, there's only one thing you really want them to do. You don't want them to fill in a form or anything. You want them to add to basket. So if they don't add to basket, they bounce. And where they bounce tells us where the problem is. So Mark, just run through home category product page bounces, where they should be.
And the reason we bang on about this bounce rate so much is because if you think about your funnel from left to right, in order to get people to the add to basket stats, so on your product page, you can actually optimize it. You want to be optimizing for more people than you've got already. And to increase the amount of people for add to basket, you have to reduce your bounce rates. Because if you reduce your bounce rate, there's a lot more people in the funnel in the first place. And therefore, it becomes really important. So for homepage, we found that you need the bounce rate to be less than 25%. Category pages as a whole, they need to be less than 50%. And product pages need to be less than 60%. And the way to find out the category and product pages is to set up in Google Analytics, set up some content groups for all your category pages. Then you can see them as a whole. And for product pages, a content group for all product pages. And you can see them as a whole as well. If you know what they are, then you can optimize them. At the moment, you'll probably see all your pages together and be very difficult for you to understand what they are individually. But you need to split them out, because as you make changes to the important kind of templates of your site, there's a template for the homepage, there's a template for the category pages, and there's a template for the product pages. And as you change those templates, obviously it changes a lot of different pages. And you need to see whether that's improved or not.
Yeah, and that, just to add to that, the bounce rate is so important, because if you decrease the bounce rate, it absolutely links to an increase out of basket, because that's the only next step. So by focusing on bounce rate, you will improve your conversion rate. I know that sounds obvious, but if you understand the basic flow and maths, it's like, it's quite a eureka moment. And what you'll find is that you'll have certain categories and certain products that are bouncing badly, and certain ones that are doing well. So some of it will be things that you can change. And we always say that every Monday you should pull off a list. Google Analytics can do this for you. It can send you an email with the top 20 or top 10 to start off with, keep it simple. Top 10 highest category pages with the highest bounce rate. And the same for products. So you can see the top 10 most searched products, most visited, landed on product pages with the highest bounce. And you're basically saying, get these right. Have a look at them. And actually,
I'm just looking at the questions, Ian, and Becky Roberts asked something about this when she says, I'm selling printers, and my category bounce rate should be 50%, as you say, but ours is 76%. Help.
Yeah.
So what could she do to improve her category
bounce rate? So, yeah, it's quite typical. And essentially, if the category page is bouncing more than 50%, it's a red flag. And 9 times out of 10, it's because the order of products on the category page. So when we say category page, we essentially mean product listing page, however you want to call it. But it's because the order of the products on that category page are wrong. And what I mean by that is the general rule is you should have your best sellers at the top. So if you're landing on that category page and you've got some obscure products at the top that are not your best sellers, then you have to make people have to hunt down for them. So check the whatever you put on the top of your category page will become typically should be your best seller, and almost it becomes your best sellers because it's the ones people click on most. But check your images, check your prices, check the order of the layout of the category pages as the first and foremost. And you might find that certain categories you need to order them in a certain way.
One way I find really good in Google Analytics is if you go to the category pages in all pages, you can then click on the navigation to see where they go next. Mm-hmm. And if you're seeing that a product that is maybe 3 lines down is actually getting clicked on more than the others, that means people are having to scroll to find the product they want. And that product probably needs to be higher. So if you think about click-through rate, a bit like you do with Google AdWords, you want to be putting your highest click-through rate products at the top of the category. And you should be automatically sorting to have the highest click-through rate, because therefore your site is the highest ease of use. The products that people click on the most are at the top. And organizing it like that is going to mean that people are moving through the site a lot more quickly. And you'll reduce the bounce rate, because people who haven't got much time and were bored, they'll find the product that they want to find.
Yeah, definitely. And again, just like merchandising in a real bricks and mortar store, I mean, there are experts who get paid millions of pounds a year to go and merchandise and set up the layout of the shelves in supermarkets. Knowing where people look at, what people look at next, and it's the same thing here. But luckily, we can do a lot of this automatically based on metrics that Mark said. So have a look at that. And that typically, if it's bouncing out because you've got the wrong products at the top, or you're taking people to a completely irrelevant category page. Sometimes it's because there's too much choice on there, that you've got hundreds of products on there, and you need to split them down into subcategories. So simple trick there is to put your little subcategory buttons at the top to make them visible. So you can actually help people. You can leave the products underneath but have the categories at the top. We've done lots of split tests around that, which is quite interesting. We can share with you. It's quite cool.
Yeah. So, I kind of call them buckets, really. And I use those for homepage as well. I'd say they're also useful too.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to reduce your homepage bounce rate, first of all, you know, you need to work out whether that's an important page for your site. I mean, if it's less than 4% of traffic, it's not. I mean, it used to be the page when we were, you know, most people drove revenue to the site, well, traffic to the site from, you know, AdWords, search, Google Shopping wasn't a thing, and it was SEO. So everything came to the homepage most of the time. But nowadays, with Google Shopping and also Facebook marketing on products and remarketing with dynamic products, the product page is mostly the landing page of the site. But let's say your homepage is an important page. It's getting 10% plus traffic. What you want to do is work out 80% of the traffic come to your homepage will probably fall into one bucket. So no, not one bucket, three to four buckets. And the importance of those buckets is that you can then have a big button on the homepage, which like an engagement device, so that when someone's in that bucket, they then click through to that and they land on a sales page specifically to that bucket. So for example, let's say you're selling printers, for example, on the homepage, you might think, well, you know, 80% of the traffic falls into one of these three ones. They either want a laser printer, they want a scanner, or they want, you know, a mono printer. And if you know that, then those are the big three buttons you need on your homepage that automatically sorts those into the right page, in the right place. And by doing that, you've taken a big friction away from the the buyer because you've automatically sorted them into the right place. And the 20% of people who don't fit into those buckets, you're always going to have those people, and they're going to be searching around because they don't really know what they want. And they might use on-site search or something like that. So you can actually put a survey on the homepage and ask people if you're starting out. You know,
well, I think generally, just to sort of give people a bit of clarity, we often find the homepages nowadays isn't really the issue, because people are landing on the product pages, and that's because of Google Shopping and Facebook ads. People tend to be going straight to the product page, so that becomes a landing page, and the homepage tends to be for people who it's the subsequent pages. And if the homepage is bouncing less than 25%, forget it. Don't worry about it. But if they do get to the homepage, the job of the homepage really should be telling people that it's okay to invest your time in this site. And so it tends to be about your humanistic qualities, the amazing reviews that you've got, the, you know, the credibility, the history, things like that.
Well, it's going to come down to what you're selling as well, isn't it? You know, if it's a rational purchase, it's about availability and price. If it's about aspirational, the homepage really needs to be selling the vision and not necessarily the product straight away. It's more about the vision, isn't it? Yeah. And, you know, like when we did that split test on that clothing manufacturer, we took pricing off the homepage and it went, the conversion rate shot up massively. And it was like, well, why did that happen? It's like, well, because we were trying to sell too quickly.
I think the homepage is a couple of things we've also split tested that we know is that the scrolling banners tend to always fail. And the reason why scrolling banners fail is because you're diluting your best offer. The other thing that is important is that your homepage banner should be your biggest selling best products for everybody. And it should be like your window shop in the high street. And so imagine if I was selling, I remember we were talking to a women's fashion online retailer, and they were saying, what should we do on the homepage? And we split tested quite a few different things and essentially came to this analogy that if I was selling, let's say, I'll use that example, women's fashion, and my average order value is £50 and it's summer, and my best sellers are summer dresses, my homepage banner, to make the most money possible, my homepage banner would say, my top 10 summer dresses under £50. Click through. Mm. That's what it would do. So don't put your obscure, random new product in there of like some leopard skin print belt that only one person would buy. You know, don't. And, you know, you remember that your customers might only be coming to your site twice or three times a year. You're lucky. So for them, it's always fresh and it's always new. Whereas you're looking at it every day and you go, oh, God, I've got to change the homepage, got to change. Well, your shoppers don't work like that.
You know, people do make the mistake of designing the site for what they want, and they're so close to the product.
Yeah.
They can no longer see it. They can no longer see what people see. And I think the carousel, which has been there, it's because people don't want to decide what to put on the homepage. They can put five things on the banner.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's become banner blindness. People do not see that. And that is the place where you need your biggest engagement device.
To do it based on what they've looked at, so you can get some good personalization side stuff. But turn off your scrolling banners. They don't work.
Replace it with an engagement device. You go and look at ASOS, their engagement device is, are you a man or a woman? Yeah. And that's become a simple way of dividing the traffic into two buckets. We know they're either men or women, and that's the simplest engagement device. If you've got, if you've got a major objection to buying, like talking about the triathlete wetsuit retailer, we did a lot of background study around what the big objection was for that. And you go on Amazon, you look at the thousands of reviews. It's all about size. It's all about fit and size. So the engagement device is kind of like, well, and give us your height, give us your weight, give us your experience. This is the size you want to be. It's about dealing on the homepage with the biggest question that people have about where they want to go. And you want to get them engaged straight away on the homepage and make it super easy for them to get started, because it is the kind of like the stepping stone to the next stage. And all you're doing is selling the next step. You're not trying to sell the checkout on the homepage. You just kind of sell the next little step. And then when they get to the next little step, which is the category, then you've got to sell the next little step, which is getting them filtered down to the actual product they want to be looking at. And there's little baby steps will get them to a sale. You're asking them, if you ask them to eat the whole cake at once, they're not going to want. You just give them a small slice and say,
yeah, well, the objective of the homepage is to get them off the homepage and onto the category. Objective of the category is to get them off the category and onto the product page. Objective of the product page is to get them to add to basket. Yeah, the basket is getting to the checkout. The checkout is to get them to buy. That's it. I know that sounds obvious, but like you just need to think about that flow.
Well, when you break down your funnel, it's a big sales funnel, isn't it, all the way through? And you've got to remove the friction as everything moves down. And you start from the left, and you make sure there's as many people as you can moving from left to right, and you hit the friction point, and you optimize that. And it's about knowing where your friction point is. So, I mean, this all really leads eventually to the product page, which is a very big page, especially, you know, that might be the starting point for everybody. So in the book, we go through the product page checklist, which is one, it's basically after looking at hundreds of sites and people coming to us, it's always the same things we see to be telling. So we actually created a checklist to say, look, let's go through the checklist first, make sure you're not doing any of these silly things. And so shall we go through it?
Yeah, I mean, I think just to touch on it briefly, the main bits about the product page is we do find that product pages tend to be bouncing really, really high, particularly when they're coming from something like Google Shopping, because there's a huge urge for people just to click back into Google or close, or actually now they're opening it, it opens in a new tab through Google Shopping. But and I think that's a result of people actually having very low engagement. And so the main problem is that the product pages tend to be dead end pages. And what we mean by that is if you're looking for a black kettle, and Google Shopping has decided that you know, out of your 50 black kettles, it's going to choose one particular black kettle that it thinks is more relevant. They click through on that, and the customer goes, well, this isn't exactly the type of black kettle that I want. But there's no other black kettles to see. There's no other there, because we're only showing that one. So the product page, first and foremost, must not be a dead-end page. It must lead them on to other black kettles or other kettles. Or if that black kettle was a stainless steel black kettle, or it was a fast heater black kettle, then we show very easily how to get to the other fast kettles or stainless steel kettles.
So a lot of those things we see is people putting, you know, related products on there too early, and related categories, you know, see other black kettles or see other kettles in, you know, electric.
It's much more important. So at this point in mind, to remember that when the first time people land on that product page, and remember they very, very rarely buy on their first visit. They're not bothered about the matching things that go with that black kettle. They're deciding whether or not that is the black kettle they want. They're not sure. So they're not going to buy the bloody extended warranty.
And even if they do like that black kettle and they think they might buy it, they want to invest time in buying the black kettle and make sure they've seen a lot of other black kettles to make sure that's the one they want to buy. Because otherwise they think, well, I don't want to buy the first one I see because that would be silly. I haven't invested. I've allocated this amount of time in my mind to buying a kettle, and I want to make sure I do it properly.
Yeah. So that's the first thing: is your product page a dead end page?
One way you can tell if people want to look around from Google Shopping, or whether or not that's the destination page, that's the product they're going to buy, is if you go to Google Analytics and you put in your product page in your Google Shopping traffic and what they buy, and then you can actually overlay that with the landing page and see whether the landing page they land on or the product page they land on is the same product that they actually end up checking out on. And usually it's very closely related between the two. But if you've got more than 4 or 5% of the traffic who actually end up checking out with a different product, that means you really need to be having related categories and other products to move people around, because they really want to look around before they buy.
Exactly. I mean, Wayfair did a quite an interesting split test, didn't they? And I apologize if this is not exactly accurate, but Wayfair said that of the people that clicked through on Google Shopping that did buy, the ones that did buy from Google Shopping, 65% of them that bought did not buy the product they first clicked on through Google Shopping, i.e. they bought something else.
And that's huge, isn't it? That's huge because, I mean, a lot of the websites we work with, it's very closely related. I mean, I very rarely see that more than 5%. So for Wayfair to see that, that's obviously something very specific to their business. And therefore, you're starting to see very different landing pages on shopping than everybody else is using. And therefore, you shouldn't copy that unless you find you've got the same type of website.
Yeah. So its product page is a massive, massive one. And it's becoming... You know, 5 years ago, people would go through home category product in that flow. Now they're going straight to the landing straight on the product page.
So some of the kind of authority messages you might put on the home page, they need to be there on the product page because they're not getting through that funnel. They're not seeing those initial ones like, you know, who these people work with, who they sell to and their reviews and who they are and all that kind of stuff. It's a lot of the time it's got to be solved through the product image.
So the first thing you've got to do is make sure it's not a dead end page. You've got to pull the related categories and attributes that are relevant. We find that doing little buttons is much more powerful than actually doing product images because it's easier to read. And we've got loads of examples of that. And then once we've done that, you then need to think about Amazon effect. So things like adding questions on product pages, it can be quite good. People that are looking at the reviews and the questions more than the actual description that you're writing, they've been quite good. Don't worry about scrolling down. The page can be quite big as possible. But actually, would you want to run through the checklist, Mark? So we talk about having the in-stock messages there.
In the book, there's the product checklist. And the first one is a common mistake is not putting add to basket above the fold. You see this loads even now, people pushing it down. They think, oh, I've got a complicated forms. I've got to put it down. The add to basket needs to be above the fold. It's fundamental to that add to basket rate. You want people to come on the product page and see where the add to basket is so they know exactly what they've got to do next, regardless of what is on the page. That if you have it off the page, there's friction there, and some people will not click on it because they'll go, I don't know where it is. Even though it's so bloody obvious that you have to scroll down a little bit, they won't. We're not rational. Second one is delivery information should be clear. I mean, it should be clearly displayed. Now, on a product page, there's only two places that people really look. If you have ever done any heat map analysis, it's the image and it's around the add to basket button. So around the add to basket button, you need to be putting your delivery information around just above the add to basket button and your stock. A stock tick, yep, in stock, delivery by Sunday on the add to basket button. And moving it there will increase your add to basket rate. Reviews need to be prominently sprayed around, again, where people are looking. If reviews are important for the product, they need to be right in that heat map area where people are looking. Don't put them in the header. Don't put them down the page. They need to be right in that bit where people are looking. People are completely blind apart from those two areas on the site. They look a little bit around the product title as well, around the add to basket button and around the image. And if you think of those circles around there, you need to be getting that key information in those areas. Images, they're 1,000 words. They're so important now because Google Shopping is all people pretty much see is the image, and the image needs to be big. And even if you're selling rational purchases like, you know, brake pads, people want to see a big image to make sure it's got the right fitting. Even if you're saying it'll fit the car, they want to see it, don't they?
Yeah.
The other thing that we talk about, number five, if the item is something that's hard to see at scale, like jewelry, you need to have something in the image that tells people how big it is. Again, a lot of people make the mistake of being too close to the product. They know what that brooch is, so they know how big it is, so they don't think anybody else will find that difficult. But if they come into it, it could be, you know, how big is that brooch? Is it one of those massive ones, or is it something small? So if you put a hand in the picture, or you put something that people know how big is it, we work with a safe company recently, and they were putting a camera in the safe, a credit card in the safe, so you could see. You know, I know how big that safe is now.
I think made.com do a really good example of a product page.
Yeah, yeah. We talked. I mean, number six is make sure there's more than one image. You want to have more than one image. You want to have a right lifestyle shot, close-up shot. You want to give people enough information to make the decision just on the imagery alone. Seven, in-stock declaration. Now, this is really important, especially around holiday seasons. So as we move towards Christmas, we've split-tested putting the in-stock and like how quickly it's going to be delivered right under the product title, and that increased around Christmas time up to 15% conversion rate because people were worried about whether it was going to get there in time. So it's about moving those messages, those stock messages, even better as they change the quantity of the item, make it look like it's going off to the warehouse and checking and actually thinking about it and going, oh yeah, I've looked at the warehouse. I've got two of those in stock. I can get you those on Wednesday. So it looks like it's dynamically done something to say it's actually in stock because everybody is bought something only to be emailed the next day and say, oh, I'm sorry, that's actually not in stock. It's going to be 4 weeks before we get that. And you don't want that. And people are once bitten, twice shy. Okay, number eight. So basically what you were talking about before, which was like related categories. Make sure you put related categories. I originally found this from the Gore-Tex, and I was looking for some Gore-Tex hiking shoes. And I was looking at Gore-Tex hiking shoes in Google Shopping. And Google Shopping is not particularly wonderful about bringing up just Gore-Tex shoes. And also, I didn't know whether they're all Gore-Tex shoes. So if I went onto the website and they said, do you want to see other Gore-Tex shoes? And I thought, well, yeah, that's better than Google Shopping because I don't know. I don't think they're all Gore-Tex. So I clicked on the related categories. I stayed on the site and I bought from that site because it brought me in, it engaged me with related categories. Had it put in related products, I don't think it would have pulled me in as much. We've split tested that on clothing sites and we've seen uplifts from doing just that. You just got to get the related attributes right, haven't you?
Yeah. Yeah, it's really, really important. That's, yeah. And it, I think it's probably, you know, quite a lot more simple than it sounds really, actually. We've done it where you can just say, put the related, the same the category that product's in, any category that product's in, or and then any attributes that you've got. So if it's something that you think is relevant for that product, we always say, if you put this as a filterable option on the category page, then show that on as a related attribute. Mm. So essentially it might be fast, fast boiling might be an option. I really want a fast boiling one. Then that should be
the other fast boiling kettles.
Yeah.
Number nine, description should not include any words that people might not have in their vocabulary. This takes me back to when I used to do a lot of copywriting, and one of the sites I was asked, it was a clothing site, I was asked to increase the conversion rate of the site. And one thing, the first thing I did, I just went through the whole site and I just got rid of words that were a little bit confusing. People didn't know. It was kind of like a scotch pocket or something like that or whatever. I just removed those. And I got about 5% just from removing the friction from the copy. And it was just such a simple thing to do. I was like, well, I don't want to make people think. If I have to make people think, you know, that they start to slow down. If they slow down, they're spending more time. They can't make a decision. And just don't try and be too fancy with it.
Yeah, I think the example that I always like, we always talk about is when we're trying to buy a shed. So we went through this fictitious example where we're actually trying to look for a shed, and everyone's selling the same shed. You might not know in the UK, you know, all the sheds are sort of the same. You know, wooden shed, and everyone's selling the same shed, all the same price, all the same delivery. And then one particular company had talked about the fact that their shed came with 10-year anti-rust galvanized nails. And because they'd written that then I said, oh my God, I didn't even know I was anxious about this. But now I am. Now it makes me doubt the other site. Now the other sites were selling the same shape with the same nail. They all had this. But they just said nails in their description. And this site had said 10-year anti-rust galvanized nails. And that, and I thought, wow, I've got to buy from these guys. So you've got to think about the anxieties people go through as well. What anxiety?
The biggest objection, isn't it? You've got to find the objection. You can find the objection from what people talk about in their reviews. One thing we always talk about is the middle reviews. You're going to talk about that in a second. But
there's a lot of product pain. And I have to say, I think we could probably do a podcast or write a book just on the product page, because it's such a significant part of the e-commerce optimization. And actually, it's normally the first 6 months of any work that we do with our e-commerce growth clients is on the product page. One of the tricks, I think, shall I talk about reviews, Mark? Is there anything else you want to add on product page?
Just the last one is number 10, and it's make sure the add to basket button is clickable, even if people have not added quantity yet. You know, a lot of websites, we see it, they kind of gray out the product that they've added to basket button and kind of don't let you click on it. And it's like, no, let people do what they want. Let them click on it and then show them what they haven't done. But show them you haven't added the right quantity. You haven't added the size. Don't gray it out, because then people will go, well, you're not even allowed to buy this product. You've got to flow with the way they want to use the site. Let them do it and then point out what they've done wrong, and then they'll correct themselves, rather than trying to force them to do something that they don't know they need to do. Don't make them think.
I think the other thing on the product page is also, if you're finding that you've got a product page that's bouncing high compared to your others, and so anything that's bouncing more than 60% we consider high, go to that product page and just think, is our pricing right? Is our image right? You know, is our title right? You know, just have a look and go, well, as an absolute layman, I imagine everyone selling this product, really start thinking and have a look at that. Because it could be that some of it will be the product page layout and the checklist that we've done, but some of it will be, we're just not competitive on that product. Or we had a stock problem. We think, it was out of stock. So we had a massive bounce because we were out of stock. And if you find that's happening a lot, then actually we would say, well, then if it is out of stock, then you need to think about how you can bring in alternatives and related products or new versions of that product. So if it's now discontinued, then you think, well, how can I monetize that page? It's the same. So, you know, regardless of the answer of the cause, it's a significant, if you've got people coming to that product page and they're bouncing, then that is the first thing. It's basically, if you don't optimize it,